KUOW podcasts are made possible by listener support. Become a new or renewing member today at KUOW.org.
From 94.9 KUOW, this is Weekday. I'm Marcy Silman. The Royal Canadian Mounted Police foiled a bombing that had been planned for Canada Day festivities in Victoria on Monday. We're going to have details on the plot just after 10 o'clock when we talk with Vaughn Palmer. In Cairo, Egypt, at least 18 people died and more than 300 were injured overnight as protests against the government of President Mohamed Morsi grew violent. The 48-hour deadline imposed by the military is up. Supporters and opponents of Morsi are bracing for something to happen. An army statement is expected at 10 a.m. Pacific time. That's 7 p.m. in Egypt. The New York Times reports that a travel ban's been placed on Mr. Morsi and top Muslim Brotherhood figures. According to Al Jazeera, Morsi has proposed a consensus government be put in place to oversee the next parliamentary election, not likely to satisfy the thousands, tens of thousands, who are gathered in Cairo's Tahrir Square. Kristen Chick is the Cairo correspondent for the Christian Science Monitor. I spoke to her just a few minutes ago from Tahrir Square. People there are gathered to find out and wait for the military's announcement.
Right now, everyone in Cairo is holding their breath, waiting for the military's announcement. They gave this 48-hour deadline for Morsi to meet the demands of the people, and he hasn't done so. So everyone's gathered in the squares, waiting to see what the military is going to do.
How many people do you see out in the streets right now?
There's hundreds of thousands at least.
I understand that last night the demonstrations became violent.
That's right. It was outside of Cairo University, and there was a pro-Morsi rally there, and I don't know exactly how it started, but it ended with gunfights between the pro and anti-Morsi sides, and at least 16 people were killed. And a lot of people are worried about a lot more violence like this if things aren't resolved.
Morsi gave a speech last night in which he said he would not give in to what he called a rebellion, and that he was the democratically elected president of Egypt.
That's right. It was a very defiant speech. You know, he said he's not going to step down, and he rejected the military's intervention. And it really did nothing to make all of these millions of people who had come down to the streets any happier with him. It seemed aimed more at his Muslim Brotherhood supporters than at the rest of the people of Egypt, and I think angered a lot of people.
How much support does he have among Egyptians at this point in time?
Well, it's hard to say exactly, but it was really apparent on Sunday that he has far, far less support than he used to have. He's alienated large portions of the Egyptian population, and you really get the feeling now that almost everyone except the Muslim Brotherhood is against him.
We have seen the copy of the 48-hour edict, I guess, from the generals in Egypt. What will this roadmap be? Are you expecting a coup, a military coup?
I think that the military is unlikely to want to lead Egypt again themselves. They didn't have such a great experience with that the first time around. It was difficult. It was not smooth. I think it's unlikely that they want a repeat of that scenario. So I think what is more likely is that they will try, if they do depose Morsi, I think it's more likely that they would try to come up with a presidential council, several people to rule Egypt, perhaps a consensus prime minister. But I don't think they want to do it themselves.
What role does Mohamed El-Baradei play in all of this? Boy, it sounds like it's getting really crowded out there.
That's right. Everyone here is just waiting for this announcement. They're really excited. They think it's going to be the end of Morsi's presidency. I'm at Tahrir Square, and everyone is just really waiting for this.
How soon is this announcement going to take place, do you think?
Well, it was supposed to be announced a little while ago, so it's you know, late as most things are in Egypt, and everyone's just waiting for it to happen.
Kristen, what we had heard was that Mohamed al-Baradei, who a lot of Americans have heard of, had been chosen to sort of be a de facto leader of the anti-Morsi people. What role? I guess I'm curious what role he's going to play in all of this. Do you know?
Yeah, the political opposition movement appointed him to be their sole negotiator with the military in this period. So he actually met with the military leaders today, and we don't yet know what came of that meeting, but he is the one who is negotiating for the opposition forces, which is a little bit ironic because these opposition forces are really following what's happening on the street. They're not leading it.
So would you describe the mood as expectant, as jubilant? You know, I hear honking horns, which would indicate to me that people are excited.
People do seem very excited. They're very sure here that Morsi's time is over. I would say it's expectant and jubilant. But there's also a protest of Morsi supporters on the other side of town. And they are also pretty upbeat. You know, when I was there earlier, they also expect the best. So we have one side here that expects Morsi's time is over, and we have another protest of his supporters who think that Morsi's going to stay in power and they're going to keep him in power.
If Morsi does step down, do you expect any kind of violence?
I think there is a potential for violence. It really depends on what happens today and the next few days. There's definitely a potential for a backlash from Morsi supporters if he's forced to step down. They have vowed to defend him with their lives and are not likely to be, you know, I don't expect them to go home without a fight, whether that's, you know, a peaceful protest or not.
Is that police cars that are coming by?
That was an ambulance. I'm not sure where it's headed.
And with that, I let Kristen Chick of the Christian Science Monitor go cover the news. She's Cairo correspondent for the organization, and she joined me from Tahrir Square. And right now, hundreds of thousands of Egyptians are gathered there. They're waiting for the military to make its statement about what it plans to do. It had given Mohamed Morsi, the Egyptian president, 48 hours, which have expired. At this point, we hear the army is expected to issue a statement at 10 a.m. Pacific time, about 45 minutes from now. You'll have updates on that from NPR, the BBC, Christian Science Monitor, all through the day here on KUOW.
It's 9:14, 94.9 KUOW News and Information.
American Roots celebrates 15 years on the airwaves with a live concert from the Rockin' Bowl in New Orleans. Traditional jazz from Treme Brass Band, Cajun rock with the Lost Bayou Ramblers, and a cavalcade of New Orleans R&B stars like Irma Thomas, Ivan Neville, and John Cleary. Bring your dancing shoes. I'm Nick Spitzer. Join me for American Roots from PRX.
American Roots, Sunday night at 8 o'clock. It's 66 degrees and mostly sunny in Seattle. We're working on a high of 80 today. Should be mostly cloudy throughout the day. We'll take an in-depth look at the holiday weekend weather forecast at 9:50.
From KUOW, this is Weekday. I'm Marcy Silman. Throughout the past year, Katie Sewell's been hitting the streets, meeting you at your workplace for our On the Job series. And where'd you go this time, Katie?
Well, you know, Marcy.
Whoops, we got to turn on your mic. It's mic number 6. There we go.
All right, there we go. Hi. Well, you know, Marcy, I just haven't spent enough time with really dangerous wild animals.
So you thought you'd go meet them?
Yeah, so I thought I'd go visit at least some that were caged, the grizzly bears at the Woodland Park Zoo in Seattle.
My name is Sada Manetti. I'm the lead zookeeper of a couple units here at the Woodland Park Zoo. Right now we're standing in the bear kitchen. This is adjacent to our office and bear holding. The bears have eaten their breakfast, and we're going to head out onto the exhibit, and we're going to put some of their favorite food items all over the exhibit for them so that when they come out of their holding this morning, they have something to do. So they're going to forage around for all the snacks we put out there. We're going to give them carrots and yams that I cut into quarters, and I'm also going to give them some omeline with honey in it that I can kind of stir up and spread all over the rock work and the branches and stuff, and then they can forage for it all morning.
Describe to me who's in the window right here. Well, he just went away. But.
No, he's still there. He's breathing down the pipe now. So this is one of our male bears. They're two brothers, and this one specifically is Kima, and he would like me to put the treats out just a little bit faster this morning. And so he peers in the window to see where I'm at with making his breakfast.
How is it to work every day with a bear right outside your window?
It's great. I can't think of better coworkers, actually. We all work here for the bears, so I kind of see the bears as my bosses, and they're beautiful. They're humongous, and their heads are huge, and they're just a total presence. And so I really, when I'm on vacation and stuff like that, I think back about wondering how the bears are doing.
I guess a way to describe it would be if you're used to having a dog waiting outside your door to come in after you let him out in the morning. That's how close this bear is right now.
Oh, yeah. He's just a couple inches away through some very thick glass, thank goodness, right?
Are you to a position where you could actually touch him?
We don't enter with them, so we manage them behind protective barriers. But having said that, they're really gentle. They're so much more gentle than people would realize. And so we do hand feed them grapes and carrots and yams and stuff. And I'll let you hand feed them as well. And they just, they're really just very habituated to us, very used to us. They really never do anything aggressive towards any of their keepers.
Where did these two bears come from?
These guys came from a Washington State University study. Their mom was in a nutrition study there, and she had these two cubs. And so they moved into this exhibit when they were 11 months old. And so they're captive born, and they're intact males. And I kind of see that as normally you wouldn't find 13-year-old adult males together in the wild, but I think the absence of a female lets us keep the peace here. And so these guys actually get along really, really great with each other, and they actually suffer separation anxiety if we try to separate them at all. So they are just two peas in a pod, and they compete a little bit for favorite food items. The one that you were looking at, Kima, he's just a little bit more dominant, and so if given the opportunity... Kima will usually displace Denali or try hard to get that one prey item. Naturally, we always provide them with two.
So. And how are they doing? I know there are fish in their exhibit. How are they doing at learning to fish?
They've come a long way. They had an epiphany with it at various points. So basically, the water's really deep. And it's a little too deep for them to multitask and always effectively fish, because in the wild they would be standing on all fours in shallow water and they would be standing there and then swiping with one paw and getting fish. But here they have to kind of swim and swipe and stand and snorkel and try to bring the fish up with their feet and all this stuff. But they have fortitude, so their persistence makes them successful at it. So these guys in the summer months literally do not tire of trying to get these fish. And so basically they exhaust these trout that are in there. They just keep at it for so long that they're intermittently quite successful at getting them. They work together as a team and they funnel them down the narrows or they throw them into the skimmers. I mean, they have all sorts of methods of trying to get these trout. Oh, having said that, in the wintertime, they don't spend as much time in the water because they just sleep. You know, they just really want, even getting them out onto exhibit is this huge production because that's entirely too far for them to walk, right?
Are you feeding them more to get them ready for winter?
Their diet varies and fluctuates completely seasonally. So in the wintertime, you really barely feed them, only because they don't really want it, and they're so bulked up, and they're in this slumber mode. When they come out of this slumber mode in the spring, they get progressively hungrier, and in the wild, they would be foraging from sunup to sundown, packing on the weight until they go into the slumber mode in the fall, like at their heaviest.
So how frustrated is he right now? I've stopped your progress.
He's used to it. There's interruptions in the course of the morning, and so he's actually being quite patient. But you can see the mud on the window where he is trying to get me to put it all together just a little bit faster for him this morning. Don't feel too sorry for him because he's already had well over 4 pounds of food this morning. So,
and he's still hungry. So what else do you have to make? Have you made everything?
I've kind of made everything. So here we are stirring the omeline and the honey. And this is going out onto the branches and rockwork and stuff. These are just, like I said, favorite food item, treat items to get them to kind of explore their exhibit in the morning. We give them the more boring stuff here in holding and force the issue with them so they kind of have to eat it. And then their favorite food items get put out on exhibit for them to look all over for.
What's the boring food for bears?
It's an omnivore biscuit that looks like a super large dog kibble, right?
Yeah, looks like dog food.
Yeah.
Well, kind of smells like dog food, too.
Exactly, exactly. So this is really, really nutritionally balanced for them, but not so interesting. A lot of people think that grizzly bears just eat meat and that's it, but really only 10% of their diet in the wild is meat. And so we give them a meat source every day. So today they're getting ground turkey. On Saturdays they get a rabbit. Every once in a while, someone will donate venison or something like that, or salmon, then they can have that on special occasions. So
what are the bears' names again?
Their bears' names are Kima and Denali. Okay. Those are their stage names.
And what do you call them separately?
Kima and Denali. That's my story. I'm sticking with it.
So where are we now?
So right now we've just entered bear holding. And so you got Denali right here and you got Kima on the other side. We hand feed him a treat every day just to check their condition and see their feeding response. So he's eating his little piece of carrot there. So as an animal person here at the zoo, if they didn't come forward with the same gusto every day, if they weren't interested, if they wouldn't respond to me, if he wouldn't be eating his food right now, his behavior would be off, and that would be something I would be cued into. You can see those 5-inch claws. Those are incredible. Those are made for digging up roots and tubers and overturning logs and stumps and getting at ants and stuff. He'll eat your microphone. He's not too picky. He'll bite now and taste later.
Maybe that would be good radio. When you hear the microphone going down the throat of a bear.
Then I'll have to retrieve it the next day. So we're heading out onto exhibit now. You can hear the babbling brook. It's one of the features in here. I'm just going to start throwing the carrots around. So the exhibit's great because it is really fluctuating terrain, and it's really complicated and interesting for them. And I can honestly say that I see them use it in a different manner every single day. And they just forage around here all morning for their treats. And so I'm going to put a little bit of honey on the branches and logs here and on the rocks. They have excellent, excellent sense of smell. So we have a hot wire surrounding the exhibit that is not squirrel strength, so it'll definitely keep a grizzly bear in. And surrounding, on the other side of the hot wire, is a very deep moat. And so that's how we keep them contained. It's kind of an illusion to the public, because when they see it, it's very typical of where they might see a bear in the wild, like tundra habitat. But you don't actually see our perimeter because it's quite soft. So it provides this effect of habitat immersion, of actually seeing an animal in a more naturalistic context. And that's what we try to do here at the zoo, is give people that kind of experience when they're seeing our animals.
Now, was there something about bears that especially drew you to them, or was it where you were assigned?
Oh, that's a good question. I've been working in zoos for like 14 years, I think, now, and so I've worked with animals from all over the world, like small African carnivores. I was at the San Diego Zoo for years, and so I worked hoofstock down there and primates. And by hoofstock, I mean gazelles and all sorts of stuff, duikers and you name it. But I have to tell you that my heart is with the North American species, because I really feel strongly that conservation has to happen here. And it's really, really easy for us to think that people, you know, in Mongolia need to stop shooting snow leopards and things like that. So it's very, very easy for people to think that conservation happens a million miles away. And for me personally, conservation is something real and imminent here.
What could people do here?
I really think that the little decisions that we make every single day add up to a lot in the course of our lifetimes. Little itty-bitty decisions, like every time you're buying something, you know what I mean, you're sending a message to who you're buying that from. And every time, you know, you're making a choice to walk somewhere instead of use your car or recycle something, little itty-bitty decisions in the course of our lifetime add up to a lot. And so we need to all remember that and realize that we play a huge role in this. So we're going to cross the Babbling Brook. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay, good. Even though we're out on exhibit, we're three locks away from a grizzly bear, just so you know. Your safety is very important to me. So you can see that I have the shift door right there locked, right? And then we have the shift door pinned. And then I also have it locked in here. So at any moment in time, because we're managing top carnivores, you are always three locks away from being in with an animal. So the way I kind of see that is you have to have three brain farts in order to be in with a grizzly bear. So
if that happens,
oh my gosh, head for the moat. Head for the moat.
Every time you come back into the room, they come back to the door.
That's right. How much longer? Now they're going to be fed three more times today in the course of the day. Then tonight they'll have access. They'll be brought in and they'll have access. Ooh. Just talking a little bit. So tonight they'll be given access to holding and food in here. And then they'll have access, overnight access to their exhibit as well, though.
Now you're locking us in.
I am. So I've taken off the first lock, but now I've locked another one. Unpinning the door. So let me just double check. We have to triple check our locks here. Let's see. That door is locked. That is unpinned. As soon as I unlock yellow, I got all my tools out of the exhibit.
Their door goes open.
Yep.
There they go.
Yep. So let me just get this all locked back up. Okay. Shift door gets locked. The door gets pinned. And so once again, we're three locks away from a bear.
Do you wish you could give him a hug?
Sometimes in the winter when they're in their slumber mode, it's really deceiving. They are, when they're sleeping, it is so cute. They get under your skin, that is for sure.
That's zookeeper Sara Minetti showing Katie Sewell around the grizzly bear exhibit at the Woodland Park Zoo. Not sure I'd want to hug them. Katie's been visiting people with interesting or unusual jobs. And if that sounds like you, send an email to weekday@kuow.org and tell us what you do. And be sure to put job in the subject line. Thanks so much. This is Weekday.
It's 9:29, and this is 94.9 KUOW News and Information. Today, the Washington Liquor Control Board meets to consider the rules for growing, processing, and selling marijuana to adults. KUOW's Ross Reynolds talks with Washington's top pot advisor, UCLA Professor Mark Kleiman. Kleiman has been dubbed the Czar of Pot. Apparently, he prefers the title of Hemperor. Either way, he'll join us at noon.
Support for KUOW comes from Pure, a member-owned insurer for responsible, high-net-worth families, offering expertise and resources to help prevent claims and resolve them without hassle when they happen. Learn more at pureinsurance.com.
50 years ago, the writer John Steinbeck took a long drive and wrote an iconic book, Travels with Charlie.
He set off with a dog going looking for America. I don't know if he found it.
Join me, Al Letson, for a journey into John Steinbeck's America and our own. Travels with Mike from PRX, the Public Radio Exchange.
That's tomorrow afternoon at 2 o'clock. We'll bring you the latest from Tahrir Square in Cairo at the top of the hour in our NPR newscast.
From 94.9 KUOW Seattle, I'm Marcy Silman. Lamolo's been called one of Seattle's best new bands, a dream pop duo. Paul's Bow natives Megan Grandel and Kendra Cox started playing music together in 2009. The buzz surrounding them got a whole lot louder after the folk rock band Head in the Heart tapped Lamolo to open for them on tour. The duo has put out an album. It's called The Kaleidoscope, and they join me in the KUOW Performance Studio. It's great to have you in here, and I think we just have to start right off with music.
Here we go.
So
That's Lamola playing live in the KUOW studios, and on guitar and vocals, Megan Grandel, and on a very energetic drum and keyboard. I think a little keyboard in there, Kendra Cox. What's the name of that tune?
On Again, Off Again.
Of course it is. I have to ask, because you've been called Dream Pop Duo by the Seattle Times. Is that an official genre of music, Dream Pop?
It sure is, yeah. The question of music, when people say, what do you sound like? That's like the hardest question, I think, to answer. And I remember one day Megan and I were, I think we were Googling our favorite bands and seeing what genres they were called. And one of our favorite bands was called Dream Pop. And we thought, oh, that's totally what we are.
So does that mean that you sound dreamy? What does it mean?
I think so. I'm not really sure.
I think it means it's a mix.
A mix?
A mix between dream and pop, you know? I mean, I think our music has moments of both, and so that's why we had a hard time categorizing what it was that we were playing.
Do you write these songs together?
It depends. Yeah, we co-wrote two of the songs on the album, and the rest were songs that I wrote on my own.
I read that you two met as kayak instructors. Is that possible?
Yeah, that's that.
Tell me about that meeting.
So we are both from the same small town of Paulsbo, Washington. And we had the ultimate summer job, which was to be kayaking instructors for a company in town called the Olympic Outdoor Center. And it was the best job. We manned the dock and taught people how to kayak and did the rentals. And that's where we met. And our relationship started out as a friendship, first through that job and later a musical relationship.
Did both of you play music at that time that you met? I mean, were you playing music independent of one another?
I started performing a long time ago when I was in like junior high, doing little coffee shop shows and lots of open mics and stuff. And Kendra, as my friend, was a really big supporter. So she would come to all my little shows and was really amazing in that way. And it wasn't until maybe 3 or 4 years later that we started playing music together.
So Kendra, were you thinking, gosh, I really want to play music with Megan, or I really want to play music because this seems so fun, or what?
I don't think that either of those things were in my mind. So I didn't play music before this. And Megan just, we did a battle of the bands. Megan at SU, it was her senior year, and she wanted to really do it big for battle of the bands. So she asked three people to play with her, two of whom had not played instruments. And
you were one of those?
Yeah. Me and our roommate Jess at the time and our friend Alex. And so we all formed together for that, and then
how much rehearsal did you have before that battle?
Not much.
1 week,
maybe 1 week.
Did you win?
No,
we got second place, which I thought was pretty impressive for only practicing for 4 or 5 days.
Yeah,
that's pretty good. So that was 2008, 2009. When was that?
2009.
And then immediately you thought from that experience, Kendra,
it was immediate after that.
Really?
Night. Oh yeah.
I want to be in a band.
I thought, yeah, it was the most. It was just, I knew in that moment. I thought, this is what I'm going to be doing.
What had you been planning to do before then?
I had no idea.
Oh, okay. So
this really worked out. I got really lucky.
Worked out really well. Megan, what were you thinking? Did Kendra come to you and say, gosh, let's form a band?
No, it was something that was always my dream to do all along. Like, since I was a kid, I always wanted to try starting a band at some point in my life. And as I was progressing through school, I knew I wanted to go to college, so I did that, and I studied something completely unrelated to music.
What did you study?
Environmental studies and anthropology, and I really enjoyed that. And I had always done music as just a hobby throughout that whole time in school, but I knew that once I graduated, I wanted to at least try to be a musician for a career and just see. And I honestly didn't think it was going to be possible, and I didn't know how far I'd be able to go with it, but I knew I at least had to try.
So here's your great friend and one of your college roommates, right? You guys were roommates, and you said, okay, let's go do this. What did you know? What did you know, Kendra, going into it?
Absolutely nothing. I think I've learned I've learned so much from this, and I started playing music for this band, so I mean, I've learned everything that I've been doing for the last 4 years. So.
Did you take lessons, or is this just by ear?
By ear, yeah. My I grew up with my dad always playing guitar in the house, and grew up in a fairly musical family, and singing in choir, and I grew up loving music, so I think that part of it was already kind of there, that background.
So not too far-fetched to,
yeah, not too far-fetched.
Make the leap. We're talking with Lamolo. On drums and keyboard is Kendra Cox. On guitar and vocal, Megan Grandel. And they've been called a dream pop duo. You play. It's one thing to play. It's another thing to say, yeah, let's make a record album, which you did yourselves and released yourselves. Why? Why do that?
Oh, why not? I think it took us a few years to get to the point where we were ready to do that. Not only with the amount of songs that we had ready, but financially. And I mean, we've been a band for over 4 years now. So the first 2.5, 3 years, we put out a couple small projects. We had a single and a small EP. But we've been playing shows constantly and just were saving every penny enough to be able to be ready to record a full-length album. So I think once we were to that point, it was something that was a step I think felt really important for us to take.
You did this on your own. There's no label. I mean, your own label, but there's nobody backing you, nobody doing distribution for you. How has that gone?
It's very busy.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, it is. I've been lucky enough to not have to work very much outside of the band. So I moved back home with my mom after college so I could save money and be able to do this. So it's just been long hours, like lots of trips to the post office. I have a little office set up in my bedroom, my computer, and we do all the booking and shipping and everything.
You're doing everything yourselves.
Mm-hmm.
When did Head and the Heart contact you and say, we want you to open for us?
You're better with dates than I am. I don't know.
I think that was in 2011, the fall of 2011.
Was it?
Yeah, I think so.
Did you know them personally before that?
Briefly.
We did, yeah. We became friends with them. We shared a bill with them in the spring, mm-hmm. Right when their band was just starting. And it was a really small,
tiny,
small, intimate show.
In Renton.
Yes, Renton. And so we met through that show and continued to support each other's bands. And it wasn't soon after that that they really took off.
Yeah, they signed to a label. They went on tour. How has that experience changed your profile in Seattle's music community or maybe the West Coast?
Tour or?
The tour, sort of getting pulled along with a group that is sort of, you know, quote unquote hot right now.
Yeah, I think it was extremely helpful for us because we were able to, I don't think we would have been ready at that point to have planned our own tour. And so having them take us out was a huge, huge learning experience. It was extremely difficult for us. That first tour was probably, it was just really long drives. And since they'd been doing it for a long time and they had a great booking agent behind them and they had a lot of support, that wasn't impossible for them, but that kind of dream was impossible for us at the time. And so coming back and getting to meet all those people out there and letting a lot of different cities hear our music was just huge. It really helped us.
What was the hardest thing for you personally about that first tour?
It was a lot of driving. Just so, I mean, and it's insane. You get in this routine that after about 2 weeks starts to feel normal, but you know, you wake up at 8, sometimes earlier, and you drive for 8 hours, and then you play the show, and then you unload your gear back into your car, and then by the time you get home, it's 3 a.m, and you wake up at 8, and you drive to the show. It's just insane.
Megan, did you expect that?
Well, I don't think I expected it to be easy, but I think Kendra and I both had much more glamorous visions of what touring might be like. The hardest part for me was not getting enough sleep. And that, I don't do very well when I don't get enough sleep.
Wow.
It's just hard.
Maybe you have the wrong career in mind.
The beautiful thing about it is that the more we've been able to tour, it's become much easier. So that's been really, it's given me a lot of confidence in that area. But for the very first tour, that part of it was really hard to learn how to do.
Yeah. I kind of just go into autopilot. I can do like 4 hours of sleep and.
So one of you
just
is awake.
Be a zombie.
One of you is awake enough to function, and you just drag Megan along with you, Kendra?
In the mornings, and then she takes over at night.
Tell me a little bit about this next gig. It's a collaboration with, I believe, three dance companies. Is that right?
It's two dance companies from Tacoma, the MLK Ballet and the Barefoot Collective. And the show itself is being put on by a group of people, and they're called The Warehouse, and they're a production company.
How did that collaboration come to be?
It's a pretty cool story. So we've been friends with the folks at The Warehouse for a few years now and have played a couple of shows through them. And they always put on really unique, memorable shows. Like, they're not just about doing the standard show. They like to make an experience for people. And so at our album release show last summer, one of the dancers was in the audience, and she said to herself, "Wow, I want to choreograph a dance to this show, basically, to this album."
To the whole album.
To the whole album, yep. So that's where the seed was planted, and she passed on the idea to The Warehouse, and then they approached us.
So you're going to play the entire album, and dancers are going to perform to it all? Is that what's going to happen?
So they're the two dance groups have split up the songs, and we will sit there and we'll play the album from the first song to the last song, and they'll do some dancing. It's going to be really cool.
Have you ever played for dancers before?
No.
I mean, besides dancers dancing for fun.
No, we haven't. So I think it's going to be a really magical evening.
Yeah.
And might that lead to more dance music? There's a lot of dancers in this region.
Maybe.
We'll have to see how this one goes.
Yeah.
I think it's just such a fun opportunity to try something new, and it comes with new challenges. But last night we had our first click track practice, so we're really trying to make sure we play everything the same tempo. You know that's really important for them, and it's something we don't have to worry about as much when it's just us.
Mm-hmm.
So certain things like that are going to be new, but I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, me too.
It's a new challenge.
It's gonna be really fun.
And then what happens next for La Mollo as a duo?
This summer we've got some fun stuff lined up. We have a show in Portland in July, and we're going to play a new music festival, the first year of Timber Music Fest, which is going to be out in Carnation, Washington, and it's going to be just a fantastic weekend of really good music and camping, and it's going to be super fun. And hopefully writing new songs and kind of just trucking along, maybe some tours coming up. And
so it was a good decision to try the music business, Megan?
I think so. I think I'm going to stick with it for a little while.
What about you, Kendra?
Yeah, I'll be around.
That's good. I think there wouldn't be a La Mollo without the two of you. Megan Grandel and Kendra Cox are the duo La Mollo. And again, they'll be performing with live dancers July 6th at Urban Grace Church in downtown Tacoma, performing their album, The Kaleidoscope, with these dancers. And you're going to take us out with the song. What is it that we're going to hear?
It's called The Whale Song.
The Whale Song on KUOW La Mollo.
Dream pop duo Lamolo recorded live in the KUOW Performance Studio by Doug Patterson. Well, we're heading into the 4th of July holiday, and for those of us at Weekday, it's the start of a long weekend. We thought we'd bring in state climatologist Nick Bond for a special early weekend forecast, and it's sunny outside my office, Nick.
Yeah, we're looking for a beautiful day today. High temperatures near 80, and So just Chamber of Commerce sort of day here.
a little cooler than it was over the weekend, yes.
Yes, and tomorrow we're going to have more of a marine influence, and it's difficult to anticipate exactly how much of these clouds and exactly when they're going to burn off and so forth. But looking for mostly a cloudy morning and a mostly sunny afternoon, but it's good bet it's going to be a little cooler than today, highs in the low to mid-70s. And then just partly cloudy in the evening when the fireworks are going off. One thing worth mentioning, it's going to be cooler than some of the evenings earlier this week. And so it's more like upper 50s to low 60s. Again, at fireworks time tomorrow night.
Sounds more normal for us.
Yes.
And are we expecting that pattern, the clouds in the morning, sun in the afternoon, to continue over the weekend?
Well, at least on Friday, and maybe even perhaps more clouds on Friday, but then a slow warm-up over the weekend. Saturday, probably pretty much more of the same, but warmer on Sunday, and even a chance for another warm spell, not as extreme, but another warm spell early next week with afternoon temperatures should get well into the 80s. And, if we keep going at this rate, it won't be long before we're picking blackberries.
Well, I like that part of it, but it makes me think about hearing about the 19 firefighters who died in Arizona at that wildfire. We've been pretty protected because of all of our rain and our snowpack, but it got me to wondering what was the influence of that big heat wave on the snow and the conditions.
Yeah. Well, it's definitely it's been melting like crazy. I'd like to thank Mark Albright of the Department of Atmospheric Sciences for pointing this out. But using the Paradise Ranger Station at Mount Rainier as an example, it's got about 30 inches of snow on the ground right now. It's been losing something like 3 inches a day in that snowpack. And so if you had your heart set on playing in the snow at Paradise, you better get on your horse.
Or you could just stay down here and enjoy sort of temperate weather.
Yeah, and it's, and again, it'll melt out really fast if it gets hot early next week, which is possible on Monday. When it got to 82 at Paradise, there was the snowpack dropped by 9 inches in one day.
That's amazing. Well, I'm happy. I mean, I liked it, and I like 80 a whole lot better, I just have to say. It's a little more comfortable at night.
Yeah, and no rain in sight. One last thing, there's a myth around here that it always rains on the 4th of July.
Oh, but it's a myth?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Okay. It,
in the last 10 years, it's rained twice. Over the 64-year record or so, it's rained, measurable rain, 18 times on the 4th of July, so less than a third of the time. That being said, it's much more likely to rain this time of this part of the month than later in the month, and the chances of hot weather go up as we get later into July. But it doesn't really, in fact, rain that often on the 4th of July.
Well, we'll not expect it tomorrow either. Thanks, Nick, and
sure.
Happy 4th to you.
Yeah, thank you.
Nick
Bye.
Bond is the Washington State climatologist, and he joins us usually on Fridays for a weekend weather outlook. And now, the sound of the day. Sounds like the sounds that little boys make when they are playing with... Oh, nah, there it is. It's a cuckoo clock. Listener Bob sent us the sound. Cuckoo clock that he bought last summer in Liechtenstein during a hut-to-hut hike in the Swiss Alps. Bob says many Americans make fun of cuckoo clocks, but in Germanic countries, they're highly prized, made of the finest materials, and they can be very expensive. They're cute, though, Rainey, don't you think?
They are cute, but they make so much noise that No. I can't handle it.
Well, but you can tape it for us. If you hear an interesting sound, whether it's a cuckoo clock or anything else, record 30 seconds and send that sound to us along with the story behind the sound. Email it to weekday@kuow.org and include sound of the day in the subject line. We are expecting the Egyptian military to speak any moment now. NPR headlines are coming up. We're also going to hear about the foiled bombing in Victoria, Canada. Today bombing. Vaughn Palmer coming up as well.
Thanks, Marcy. It's a minute before 10 o'clock. You're listening to KUOW FM Seattle, KUOW Tumwater, KQOW Bellingham, and Digital HD Services.
Support for KUOW comes from PETA, People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, reminding listeners to keep animals safely indoors during fireworks displays, and providing vegan recipes for the 4th of July with vegan chili dogs, veggie burgers, and
thanks for listening. The program you just heard was made possible by the financial support of our listeners. Support this program and others like it by making a pledge today at kuow.org.